Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast. And we are really excited to have our good friends and wonderful guests that we have had several times on the show in the past. And that's Drs. Amit Goswami and Valentina Onasore. And Dr. Goswami was one of my earlier guests I had on the show way back when. And I remember being so excited to be able to talk to him because he was someone that I had followed his work for years prior, and was so excited to actually be able to get to meet him and pick his brain on a lot of things I had questions about. And those that don't know, Dr. Amit Goswami is a theoretical physicist. He's a quantum activist. He's written a number of different books. I'll put the whole laundry list on here after. And when we got to interview him last time, he had been doing a lot of work with Dr. Valentina Onasore, who's a family medicine physician who really integrates alternative medicine systems into her practice. And they have this really beautiful dynamic. I find the way you guys explain information and, you know, really bringing in these different male and female energies and tie them together in such a beautiful way. And really, I think, moving health to where we're going to be going to in the future. And we're super excited to have you guys back to get your perspective on this concept of free will and mastering our life, especially when we look at how it integrates, because you guys do a lot of work around integrating science and medicine and spirituality. And I ultimately think you find where the overlying truths lie within all of those things. And then we're trying to figure out how do we explain them in a way that kind of appeals to the brain. I think these concepts that we've learned through spirituality for a long time. So thank you so much for both joining us again today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So why don't we just jump right into it? From your perspective, guys, where does free will fall into the picture? Do we have free will? Where are the boundaries on free will? What does free will even mean? Because
we certainly do have free will, although it is true that the free will that we are entitled to, if we can act in the quantum mode, as we see it, would have been really amazing. I mean, in principle, we can have total freedom of choice, free to choose anything. I mean, creativity is completely allowed in the quantum worldview. However, it is true that reflection in the mirror of memory, past memory, brain circuits, if you will, that does compromise free will a whole lot. In the limit of infinite feedback from memory, we would have no free will at all. But of course, that is just not going to happen to anybody. So we have free will. But this free will mainly expresses itself in the free will to say no to conditioning. Other than that, the free will is basically choose among alternatives, which are conditioned spectrum of choices, like what flavor of ice cream would you like? That kind of free will means a lot to people still, you know. I mean, when we are dominated by another country, for example, the free will that is affected is this, what kind of ice cream would you like, in some sense, although it becomes quite difficult to handle if you don't have freedom to speak at all, which can also happen. So these things do matter. Freedom of speech, the usual way, does matter. And quantum physics position is that, yes, that we do have that. We do have freedom to speak within a spectrum of conditioning. However, if we can leave behind the ego conditioning, which we can by choosing a life of transformation, then we can explore infinite potentiality of the quantum world that quantum worldview permits. And then we have, as I said, unlimited freedom of choice, freedom to choose anything creative that within the science of consciousness. So it's a huge improvement from the Newtonian point of view, behavioral cognitive point of view of psychology today, where free will does not really even exist.
Yeah, can I jump in also?
Absolutely.
So I think the problem with the free will is that we don't use it, you know? Also the same like about the choice, you know, do we have a choice? I mean, we are not really choosing from the ego functioning mode, you know? So is this freedom of choice, actually, it's the more we come close to the quantum self and actually, or at least to the supramental level of our being. And again, it is, yeah, we can say no to conditioning if we do, you know, and to overcome some obstacles, you know, and to eventually make our intentions come true if we align our intention with this purposive mode of consciousness. But that's not happening in the usual way of functioning when we are really ego dominated, you know. And then, yeah, I know a little bit why you're thinking of this subject. And it's, I love always your subjects. You're just choosing so practical subjects. Because this is, again, this problem of the free will, of course, it refers also to what's happening with dictators in various countries, yeah? And of course, we all want the free will. And the question is, if somebody can take our free will, you know? And you know, obviously, it's possible in this way, because we don't exercise it, you know? So it's, if you want materialists, you know, they do it with this clever proposition that we are machines, right? And then if you think of religions, which is not a spirituality, you know, so if you think of religions, they do it by proposing that it is the omnipotent God's downward causation that only makes the things, everything happens, you know, and you have no role to play, you know. So again, there are dictators, more or less known, actually, because we are very much predictable. That's a problem. Easily to be manipulated unless we develop towards this, the soul development, what we call, you know. And again, so much confusion in everybody if do we really have free will or not. You know, you're seeing so many commercials that are influencing you immediately. And everybody's kind of looking for a leader to tell them what to do. If you take a look, you know, it's a promised land there. And if you look around, you see that people, many people have given up this personal power to choose, you know, and to make a better world for themselves or for others, you know. And there's a really psychology of this question of choice, which is very important to address, yeah.
Yeah, I love where you guys have gone with that. And there's a few questions that have come up around it. And throughout our time running this entire series, and like you were mentioning, I mean, we've talked about it in lots of different angles, and we've looked at stuff from media and flicker rates and subconscious programming and lots of different things. But to me, I think the part that's the most important that we keep coming back to is really who is it that's making the choices, right? And I think as RJ Spina said, which I think really summed it up nicely, he said, free will is not being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. It's liberating yourself from the tyranny of the finite mind. So when you were saying we often don't use or exercise our free will, to me, it feels like if we are constantly making our decisions solely based on that finite mind or that egoic piece of us, which is a part of us, we're going to be mostly probably running through conditioned responses and not truly accessing, from my perspective, the free will that does exist. So I guess the question then is that kind of what you guys are sort of tying in as well in your own words?
Yeah, we do it from quantum equations point of view, quantum movement, indeed, through the reflection of memory, indeed, that feedback does affect the equations. So what happens is that when you get a completely free mind, then you can choose any mental meaning. But with conditioning, what happens is that the spectrum becomes limited, only limited to what you responded with in the past. And that is a very limited amount of choice. So I don't put much value to that. I completely agree with you that unless we free ourselves from that spectrum of conditioning, we are not really exercising our freedom to choose. And to really exercise it, as Valentina said, we have to overcome certain barriers. We certainly have to give up ego's control and learn to make intentions, learn to hear intuitions, engage extrasensory perception that brings us the intuitions, and eventually really engage the whole creative process in order to discover that we really have the power to choose health as opposed to disease, happiness as opposed to sorrow. And these are absolutely amazing choices. We can really live a happy, intelligent life if we choose to. But for that choice, we really have to work a little towards transformation.
Well, and like you mentioned, I think, you know, around living happily and intelligently, it's like, I would say the vast majority of time, that's not the case for most people. I'd say most people live more in a state of kind of overwhelm or constant stress and sort of, you know, usually recreating the same sorts of scenarios over and over again. So why is that happening, and how do we start the process of rewiring ourselves? Because I feel like rewiring our brain, but it's, I feel like there's a interconnection between the brain and the heart that goes hand in hand with all of this. How do we begin that process of sort of liberating ourselves from that conditioned reality?
Well, the first thing is the brain. We wrote a book recently, Valentina and I, a quantum brain, in which we were able to show that in between the ego and the quantum self, where freedom is complete, there is a region, preconscious, where if we go, then freedom increases gradually. So there is that domain. There is that freedom to access preconscious. We don't have to all the way have intuition or creative experiences in order to experience freedom. We can, in fact, steadily enter this domain of positivity, where we have more and more freedom. In other words, consciousness expands and we can include others, and we can also experience greater and greater, bigger and bigger spectrum of choices. So in this way, meditation is a way of entering the preconscious. And you mentioned the heart. Heart is, of course, directly takes us to the quantum self. If we want to access quantum self, there is no better way than to approach it through the heart. But yeah, through the brain, good. That is what we discovered in the quantum brain.
Okay, let me jump in also. So this may be just some notions that can be far from a person which is practical and wants to understand this. So I just want to add something. Okay, I think the first thing that has to be addressed if we want to discover this power of choice and to discover the power of the heart and all that is attention, simply attention, you know, because there's a very strong relation between attention and choice, you know, and attention and everything, actually. If you speak about what we call the hero's journey, transformation journey that we all have to go through, if we don't learn to be attentive, there's no way, you know. And nowadays, I believe this is the major problem. The most problem that is not really addressed, and it has to be cultivated from the childhood, obviously. And nowadays, you know, we spoke other times also, we just give a tablet to the kid, you know, or a phone before his brain is developed, before we have a chance for all the other brains to develop. You know, we speak about the brains at the level of, you know, the abdominal brain, in the heart area it was discovered, and also then further. But again, in order to allow all this possible development, you know, and all the potentialities that exist in our being to develop, we need to start with learning about attention, you know, and doing things one at a time, maybe, you know, and again, training, even from where we are, you know, but especially from childhood, I would say, you know. But then also later on, if I have a patient with depression, for example, and even myself, I was there, you know, this is the thing that that really made the most sense, you know, to start with. Or even if there's any other disease, you know, not just unhappiness, which is actually, it goes hand in hand with the state of health. Yeah.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And with all this beautiful potential of a human being. But again, attention has to be really, really developed because actually quantum attention, you know, and then we only, we speak of intention and choice, you know, because consciousness always chooses, yes. So attention is best when the things are clear. And we usually pay attention mostly to what we have experienced before, you know. There's this kind of conditioning that is created there, you know. Vague things that we didn't experience, you know. An average person cannot see them. So actually, you will even miss your choices, you know. So actually, that's why attention is a characteristic of, if you want, the genius person, you know, because they can pay attention also to the unknown, you know. Usually, we are afraid of the unknown, right? And again, an average person may not even notice that maybe even a quantum leap took place, you know, and he or she was faced with an unknown something, you know, but a genius will look for it and will become aware, you know. So attention really plays a huge role in any discovery in later in insights, of course, but there's a clarity that has to be built in the person, you know. And again, without the preparation, you don't know what to expect, you know. There's a readiness that appears as we develop, you know. But when we don't have attention, you know, consciousness will choose from the statistical average based on a particular choice in a spectrum of choices that I have established to a respective stimuli, you know. So it's really crucial attention. Otherwise, it's just really conditioned person. And there are ways to train, you know. So before going into meditation, that really is the key later on, we start with focusing on various objects, initially on outer objects and then on inner movement of vital energy and so on, you know. But first we start with what is called concentration meditation in order to train this quantum attention, if you want. But again, if we don't pay attention, we cannot transform and we cannot bring any objective into practice. You know, you can even do rituals and all kind of meditation, you will think it's meditation, but conditioning may not be enough to go with the past condition, you know. There'll be a lot of conditioning there, so unless we pay huge attention, anxiety, depression, ADHD, you know, it's a sure sign of a person who lost the capacity of attention, you know, and who cannot exert the willpower, you know. Willpower again goes hand in hand with the choice, yeah, with the freedom of choice, with conditioning, with self-respect, you know. So actually it's part of self-respect and self-love to learn to cultivate attention. And then another thing which I would recommend is called patience. So attention and patience right now, I think it's the things that we lack the most in order to even start this journey of transformation.
Beautiful. I wanted to ask you, when you say quantum attention, can you define that?
All right. So quantum, when we say quantum, what we say? We refer to all this world of potentialities, of awakening, the potentiality that exists in us. And also we refer to the power of the subtle, you know, because again, as I said, we speak really of the power of choice, not from the ego dominated mind and way of living, but actually from the supramental level, you know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You talked about attention, and I'm just reading a book right now, and I can't remember what's the name of the author, Nancy.
I'll have to
look. She had a near-death experience and then basically really saw the other side and came back and then shares kind of her experience with it. And she talks around the concept. This book that we were reading was really tying around manifestation specifically. And she was kind of talking about some of the different sort of theories that have been out there and sort of debunk some of them, but sort of focused on the real heart of it is attention is the very first part. And then she talks specifically around the intention kind of tied to it. And I think what often ties into this feeling of no doubts, right? But attention and patience you talked about were two things. And I'm like, you know, it's a tricky thing because living in this world right at the moment, I would say if you're not really consciously taking control of that and you're a little bit more on autopilot with stuff, your attention will be almost dictated for you. And it's set up in a way where it can be so addictive to like untether from it. So when we know how important attention is, how do we start that process? What does that mean for some of the practices for people to help to refocus their attention? Because the reality is like in the day-to-day, if you're on the screen all the time, you'll see this with kids really clearly. You get them out of the screen and it's like their world opens up in a very different way. We've been fortunate enough to have our kids in a forest school, and it's like it's like the blossoming that takes place in that environment where they're outdoor all day. There's zero screens. Exactly. Not that I'm against screens for certain things, but it's this idea of balance with it. And you know, it brings up a conversation around just technology and what part of it is beneficial and when does it start to be detrimental to us because of its effects on our attention and literally programmed in a way to capture our attention and create addiction.
For today's human, actually, the problem basically comes from too much information processing, social media and all that. So the first thing that we have to teach our kids is to pay attention to meaning rather than just to process what other people are saying without finding what it means to me. That is the question that lacks. And in addition, of course, the usual things, the negative emotions are in the brain. Those are built in. So they are mostly unconscious. If we don't pay attention, they immediately will capture us. We pick it up from other people also because we have mirror neurons that mirrors the behavior of others. And we pick them up. If we don't have attention, we pick up similarly, signals from the pleasure circuits. All of a sudden, we see an advertisement and we feel that we have to eat. Where does it come from? Because we are not paying attention. So this human condition, what we define as the human condition, this me-centeredness, information processing, negative emotions, and the pleasure circuits, paying attention to them, paying heed to them, but without attention. If we pay attention, then we can keep all these things at bay. Not that we can prevent it completely, because pleasure, of course, are also necessities of life. But attention enables us to choose. This is the basic thing. Since we are talking about free will and choice, this is the basic thing. And this is where this point of attention becomes so important. Resilience and patience is also important because, of course, we will fail. And that discourages us sometimes. But we shouldn't be discouraged because, okay, so I missed it once, I was not attentive, and so something happened unconsciously, like negative emotions, or I got into pressure, which I don't need in that way. But we must recover immediately. There's no sense in feeling that, okay, I cannot do it. That's patience, that's the resilience. I like the word resilience even better because, you know, you're staying on. I am not going to quit, that I'm not a quitter. That's very important for reclaiming freedom, freedom to choose.
Yeah, let me jump in because Amit says two times something about pleasure, and I don't want anybody to remain with misunderstandings. Because, for example, even in the training of attention, if you have a love relationship, you know, and again, pleasure is not something bad. It's not at all. It's an energy that can be and should be used, you know. So it's another definition that can come for love, you know, because again, it's not something to avoid. But for example, you asked about practices for attention. Even simply paying attention to your lover, you know, and slightly doing caresses with love, using your hand, you know, from tip to, you know, to the head and everything, you know. For example, this can be an exercise to train your attention, you know. Even hugging somebody can help you train your attention in the heart, you know. Or, for example, yeah, there are, I mean, you know, speaking about the chakras, we don't go now into the chakras, but there's particularly one of the chakras where it's even called the third eye, you know, in the brow area and the subtle level here. So this chakra has to do mostly with this function of attention and with actually being together, you know, learning to be centered. And there are various exercises. For example, you can even train the kids or yourself with focusing on an object, for example, a ping pong ball, you know, if you hold it here, you know, and first of all, you're concentrated on it with the eyes open, with full attention, as if your life depends on that. So kind of it would be interesting to awaken this kind of, you know, playfully awakening this kind of interest for this kind of attention, you know, like as if you do it with all of you, you know. Or for example, I mean, you find yourself reading something that is, it's really captivating you and you're fully present there. So those are moments when you're so attentive and so present in that action that you may tap into a supramental state there. You know, you will not even hear that somebody comes on the door, you know. Or another thing is, for example, they have a favorite fruit. My fruit is mango, you know. And you can, yeah, if the eyes close, you can again visualize this fruit somewhere, for example, there at the level of Ajna chakra, and try to, again, once focus, and then also try to bring up all the other sensations, you know, so as if you're smelling it, as if you're tasting it and all that. So, for example, this would be easy ways. Then there are yantras, you know, if you heard about yantras, these geometrical figures that can put you in resonance with various forms of consciousness of in the universe, of energies. Or eventually, okay, so a very easy practice is simply focusing on your own breathing, you know. So in the morning, if you do it, in the evening, even 5 minutes, it's part of what is called the concept of mental hygiene, you know, or deep ecology. And it's something that completes any moral or ethical base, you know, if you like. It's like, again, we pay attention, we take a bath, or we clean the house, you know, every few days, at least, if not every day. But we should really also watch what we accumulate on this, on the mental level, on the psycho-mental health, you know. So again, simply keeping your back straight and moving your attention to your breathing, the air coming in through the nostrils and out, and only that. You can also use aromatherapy if it's helping, you know. So again, you have to find ways creatively and playfully, especially with the kids, to make them practice attention, you know, so not that 1 second is this, 1 second is that, you know, then you don't have any power in creating later on an intention, you know. So the principle of this mental hygiene or purification process is that the speed of removing the impurities has to be greater than the speed of their accumulation or pollution, you know. And again, it's a constant purification that has to be done on the mental level in this way with attention, yeah? And then also a behavior has to be stimulated that reduces the process of mental pollution, yeah? So as you say, you have your kids that go and you know, a lot in nature and to the school that is really helping them, not you know, the usual way what's happening nowadays in education. So that's a very good, you have I love already your kids. I hope I'll meet them one day.
Oh, that would be really cute.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It's built in. I feel like even spending time in nature, what you're proposing as far as paying attention and patience or resilience, I think a lot of when you're saying attention and the way to harness that through meditation, it's just to be able to arrive in presence, correct?
Yeah, and also, again, for example, you said nature. So walking in nature, listening to the birds, you know, smelling whatever is there, and walking. As you walk, you can also pay attention to your breathing as you walk, and eventually you can even dive into a state of very, very deep meditation, a state of sacredness that is opening there in front of you. Once it's truly like with simple practices of attention and being present in this way,
you know, it's one of those things where we, as adults, it's like we're trying to figure our way back, you know, because we've gotten so distorted over the time and away from what I think is natural. But, you know, you watch kids that haven't had a chance to have too much stuff start to distort their natural senses. And it's like the other day, we've got like four chickens. We had five, but a hawk got one of them. But we've got four chickens in the back, and they're starting to look, they're getting bigger, and they're hard to discern the difference between them very, very much now. And my six-year-old Sophie, we were talking about which one is Gem and which one is Lemon? And she's like, oh, well, Lemon has darker eyes. You can see it. You got more orange on her eyes, and the other one has more yellow. I'm like, we're just like, oh my gosh. And you know, it's like she naturally is inquisitive, especially in nature. You'll see it, or like our younger one, Sage. It's like we'll be walking through the forest, and she will always end up stopping and staring at like the mushrooms or finding a bug and watching it. So it's this thing where it's like, I think what's important for us to remember is it's like that's an innate ability that we're born into this world with. I really feel like that's a natural state. but now we're trying to get back to that natural state, but at least to know that it is something that is there inside of us to be able to access.
Yeah, and let's look at the kid which is eating an apple, you know, or a fruit, with how much curiosity he's doing it and how fully present is there. We are just taking things for granted, and that's why we become like machines, you know. And we don't know how to walk in the rain, you know. We don't know how to walk barefoot, the grass, and feel that, all that. So eventually, I think we need to get back to that state of you know, not infantiles, but really children, because children are having very easily consciousness expanded, you know.
One thing we have to recognize is that we have to take them to environments where their curiosities are. It's that point of if curiosity and passion are related. Unless you have curiosity, you don't get the passion to change, to investigate, to explore. So curiosity is the one that suffers most when we engage ourselves with things like social media. We start with a little bit of curiosity. How am I looking today? How do my friends react to my photograph? Okay, there's a little bit of curiosity. But then you get lost in the me-centeredness. They haven't said, okay, now I'm looking all right. Or if I'm not looking all right, I get absorbed into why am I not looking all right? And then, you know, the whole paraphernalia. It's a tremendous thing that kids go through today. Mm-hmm. We got to have control over, control is not the right word, we are talking about freedom, but we got to have ways to make social media not so much a way of dumbing down the kids. Literally, the kids just attached to social media means that we're going to lose curiosity. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is what is aroused when we go into places like nature, of course, because that's natural for us to, or look at the sky. These are the ways to be curious. But, you know, when kids are taught early on that you have a medicine for boredom, then, of course, every time they get bored, which is very often, they would consult cell phone and social media, and this is the problem. This is really is the problem with today's kids. You don't have to look very far. I mean, you know, of course, negative emotions that get to them too, but this information processing is the basic problem.
And well, that's with why us also,
and curiosity and all this.
It's with adults as well. You know, we are waking up, we jump on the phone. Even I see myself, when I see myself doing that, I just want to jump on the phone and see if I got a message from my mother, no matter what is there, you know? So we need to, you know, to take it easier, you know, and take a break and wake up and kind of with that feeling of what is really essential, you know, start the day in a certain way.
Quantum physics makes it very clear. It's do attention, focus, but also be, learn to be just aware, just not even focus, just be aware, just sit, being what other people would say, oh, okay, he's just being bored. But that is there, that's the key of healthy mind, being ability of being bored without having to consult social media and other things that attracts our attention, which is not really attention because that attention is very fickle. I have to move on to another one to keep busy.
Yeah, it's like staying one step ahead of the restless energy that's always there. And if we can actually, this is what I think is so valuable about a practice that's meditation or even contemplation in nature, something along those lines. I mean, meditation really gets you practicing being still and not needing something else, right? It's like if you can stay long enough, you kind of burn through that restless energy, and eventually then you've got that sort of space where I think then we actually, that's to me, that's the space where the free choice really lies. It's in that stillness. It's like when we start to cultivate and practice that, and I really do think it's like you have to practice it because the brain is not designed to do that anymore because of just how we've lived our life for so long. So we have to find ways to incorporate that stillness. Outside of meditation, what are some of the practices that you guys find are beneficial in starting that process of cultivating that stillness inside so that we can find that space again to really choose.
Yeah. The meditation, concentration and awareness, what we teach, because one creates the ability of focusing, the other creates the ability of just sitting. This just sitting is a very, very good quality to cultivate for anyone, in order to be creative, in order to be happy, in order to avoid things like hyperactivity, developing hyperactive attention disorder. All these things can be taught to kids if we, from early on, and really this belief that kids should not meditate, okay, maybe not a three-year-old, not a four-year-old, but beginning from five, they can and they should learn to meditate. A little meditation really goes a long way in terms of teaching them to be creative in the future.
Yeah, and what I found very, very efficient, even before engaging in meditation, as I said, would be practices such as Hatha Yoga practices. That's my favorite. And especially if you have somebody who knows how to teach you that, because then it becomes a contemplative meditation, really, and it helps, it really prepares the mind, because you will enjoy holding a certain position with the focus on those exact ways, how on the meridians, on or respective chakra, or whatever happens there, eventually really learning to relax, because there's a very strong connection between relaxation and awareness, actually. They really have to be trained to come together, you know, that's the idea. And then again, so you can learn this process of attention and meditation while practicing something like Hatha Yoga, as I would recommend, or Qigong, or Tai Chi, or even dancing, for example, you know. But again, maintaining consciously your attention on something that you want to develop, you know, it depends on what is the action, yeah. And then see what's happening, because of course, then later you get to concentration meditation. But the idea is not just to practice when you're sitting, you know, or when you have it isolated. Eventually, probably you aim to leave what is called being centered in the heart, which is not just physical heart. You know, it's a supramental, it's a gate to the supramental axis. Actually, you know, so it's that way of really living in the supramental level. That should be kind of a purpose, because that's where you have your mind and the heart are in a very, in a beautiful state of coherence and in a superior state of integration. So that's not supposed to be only when you take 10 minutes or even 1 hour to practice, but the idea is to take it in your life, you know, and then get the feedback from life. It's not just to have something isolated eventually.
Mm-hmm. You spoke earlier about the importance of paying attention to meaning. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because one of my questions with that is again, I feel like even the concept of meaning is complex sometimes. It's almost like, what is it, the egoic mind that's creating meaning, or is it the true higher self that's creating meaning? How do you discern the difference between what are, you know, meaning, what are maybe our desires are in a true sense of meaning? What does that feel like? How can you discern the difference on which one's kind of pulling you back into almost the same conditioned patterning, and what's something new that's actually allowing an expansion to take place?
Yeah, meaning is what mind does. The simple way of understanding meaning is really what mind does. That is mind's job. Now, when we talk about other people's meaning, we use it as information. It becomes information. If I'm not looking for examining that information to see what meaning that information has for me. That's where meaning comes in. Anything, any stimulus, if we engage the mind, it's going to look for the meaning. In fact, we don't even notice stimuli unless mind notices that there must be some meaning to it. That's when we notice a stimulus. Otherwise, the brain is just picking up all kinds of stimuli, but we don't see them, we don't perceive them. To perceive any stimulus, we need to engage meaning. It's the problem with my meaning or other people's meaning. It's other people's meaning that creates that attention deficit disorder and all that. That's when kids become hyperactive, because there's nothing to engage. It's other people's meaning, so I can pass it on. Okay, Trump has done this today. He has sneezed twice instead of three times. You know, that's trivial information. So I move on to another one, another celebrity. Okay, what is happening at FIFA? You know, this kind of thing. So nothing engages me because I'm not engaging my mind to think about it. And this is where the meaning is so much important. And then, of course, you know, the Balanchine ethics of talking about supramental, this is extremely important. If the meaning does not serve any purpose, then what good is it? So we have to bring in purpose, and that's where these archetypes, the supramental comes in. That's where we become purposive. Love, beauty, justice, truth. When we look at specific meaning in those contexts, then those meanings become alive in our life and becomes a force that changes us.
How much of this also involves us actively pursuing new experiences? Because I think a lot of times too, it's like to access some of that stuff. I mean, you can find it in your everyday for sure, but sometimes I think you have to get out of your box of experiences that you're used to having to have a different experience that actually touches you in a different way where you feel it. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, the important thing is that, you know, we have to pay attention to yourself. What is happening inside of me, rather than too much attention to outside of me. This inside, if we pay attention, and then meaning and purpose, that drive towards meaning and purpose, fortunately, of course, it has to be that way, because after all, we are built from consciousness. So the science of consciousness guarantees that we have a drive towards finding meaning and purpose. And these drives become very prominent at certain ages. For example, in the teen years, like at 15, we all ask this question, what is the meaning of my life? We have a tremendous opportunity. At midlife, again, we have a tremendous opportunity of what is the meaning of my life? Am I really getting anywhere to fulfill my purpose, etc.? So meaning and purpose is built into us as a curiosity, some points of our life in a natural way. That helps. But still, the point, of course, that we are making, that freedom, pursue freedom, see free choice, see attention, see relaxation, because these are the components which would enable me to be sensitive to those drives of meaning and purpose. Otherwise, what happens is that they come, but we don't pay attention. We don't have the capacity of paying attention to them. We are not sensitive enough. So we just lack the having a sense of, you know, creativity theorists use the word nuance. Sensitivity to finer things, subtle things of life, subtle internal things, intention, attention, intuition, inspiration, these kinds of things, feelings in the body, feelings in the gut, feelings in the heart. We have to become sensitive. And this sensitivity is really what lacks when kids are dumbed down in that mechanical state of going through to avoid boredom, anything to avoid boredom.
So let me just add that, because Amit mentioned that curiosity. And I think when I talked to you first, the last days, I was mentioning about this new book that is about to be published, The Reenchantment of Your Reality, that goes very much with this topic, because again, what is this enchantment, and you know, how can we get re-enchanted, you know, because again, children experience it, you know, the special connection to the universe, yeah, and they can verbalize it or not, you know, but as we grow this rational mind, the enchantment gives way to separateness and this cultural individuality and so on, you know. But if we speak about mentally healthy people, you know, the enchantment, you know, remains in milder forms of curiosity about meaning and purpose of life, you know. Even if nowadays is so much dementia out there, yeah, and at very early age because of so much lack of meaning and purpose, you know. And yeah, we need to really address it. And the thing is that there is no what is called free lunch, you know? So again, there are, so we can co-create our reality. There are a lot of mysterious secrets, and that will make us very happy as we discover it. But really, there's no free lunch. We know that's the thing. We have to act, you know, and to manifest meaning and purpose, also happiness, intelligence, the archetype of our life, our dharma. We have to awaken those hidden quantum connections, you know, where we have our, if you want, other half of our co-creating power, you know. And of course, that is the creative process for manifestation, you know. But the fact is that previously people were engaging into the transcendental world more, you know. So they were having so many ways to engage certain rituals, you know, that nowadays we really just lost this kind of connections. And the idea is to eventually to learn to engage transformative creatively and manifest the new you, so we can engage with the world happily and more intelligently until we are ready for further stages of evolution, you know. But the first stages have to, you know, we have to start with something.
Mm-hmm. Is that a new book you guys are doing, The Reenchantment of Reality? Oh, that'll be exciting. When does that come out?
In a few days, actually.
Oh,
so it's in right now. It's going to be published next week, you know, in USA. Okay.
Send us a link on that, and we'll put that out through the platform.
I will send it in the cover if you want. I'll send it the cover.
Yeah, wonderful. That'll be exciting. I think that's actually a really great title too, because it is. It's trying to get back to being enchanted with your reality. I know for me, curiosity, also, I think because I see it in the kids, like so inherently, that when they're curious, and I really think the idea from early on is how do we foster curiosity? Because I really think that is that's our natural guide to our life purpose, whatever that is. But I think that's a part of the unfolding of it, is following our curiosities. For me, it feels like this inspiration to do something, and then that's my body feels a certain way. At this point though, because I do feel there's a lot of stuff that gets crossed over, how do you discern the difference between when curiosity is more tied into an addiction versus when curiosity is actually helping you guide you to more of a life plan? So, because I feel like sometimes we can be really curious about something, but it's because it's all tied up in that sort of addiction, you know, because sometimes if people aren't really used to maybe feeling genuine curiosity, those things can kind of look similar at some point. So how do you discern the difference between those two, on where someone can almost say to themselves, okay, I'm actually, that's addiction. That's me just kind of going into, I'm not really curious. That's more this versus, oh, this is, you know, like, oh, I'm really curious for that next game, fighting and shooting game. I'm so curious to go see what that's like. Sometimes I don't know, and that might be, maybe there is a part of that that's a life plan too, but I feel like there's aspects that get caught up in addiction. So how do you discern those? This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.